Stu Does America.
We have the State of the Race podcast. We're probably doing a new one this week, get you updated on where the race stands, and we'll be updating it more and more as we get closer and closer to the actual election. Be sure to check it out wherever you get your podcasts. It's an audio-only stream available under the Stu Does America stream. So, you don't look for State of the Race. Look for Stu Does America. Sign up there. You get this show as well. Now, over on YouTube, you'll get the main show only on video. It's video and audio, of course, but you'll get a bunch of other videos as well. We've got some really good stuff coming up soon. I think you're going to enjoy. Jill Savage is here to talk about the left's latest attempts to ruin sports for all of us. Calamity Pete Buttigieg had a heck of a weekend. I'll fill you in on his latest antics, but we're going to start by doing Easter gaslighting. And we start with Trans Visibility Day because, I mean, first of all, I hope you did your trans visibility egg hunt this weekend. All the kiddies always love that one. Proclamation of Transgender Day of Visibility 2024 from the White House. This freaked everybody out. However, if you look at the statement here, and I've got it pulled up for you, at the very top, you see the logo of the White House, and there's an Easter bunny there. So a lot of people were like, hey, you said you didn't say anything about Easter, but there it is. There's an Easter bunny right there. Yeah, we're not talking about that Easter, okay? The one we're upset about was, the one with God involved and Jesus and stuff. Remember that one? I don't know if you know that exists. Anyway, here's what he said. Today, we send a message to all transgender Americans. You are loved. You are heard. You are understood. You are belong. You are America. You are absolutely loved. Everyone should be loved. I don't know that I necessarily understand. I can't necessarily understand. I think it's maybe a situation that you're understanding maybe on your own, but not really something that I get. But maybe Joe gets it, and that's great. You are America and my entire administration, and I have your back. Now, that's obviously a lie. He's using them just like he uses everybody else. Now, therefore, I, Joseph Robinette, I'm not using R, Joseph Robinette Biden Jr., President of the United States, by virtue of the authority vested in me by the Constitution and the laws of the United States, do hereby proclaim March 31st, 2024 as Transgender Day of Visibility. Blah, 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 blah. Now, look. Visibility never really a problem for trans people. In fact, I would say the whole point of this is idiotic because we all see, we all can see, we can all see it. Like whether it's the bulge or the Adam's apple, the point is we're seeing it all the time. We always notice. This is not a big shock. Not like people see Dylan Mulvaney are like, oh my gosh, which one is that originally? I can't tell. We all can tell immediately. No more visibility is going to be needed. Now, that point, maybe not the highest brow point you will hear on this particular program. Abigail Anthony over at National Review makes a better, more refined point as she says, if trans women are women and trans men are men, as we hear so often, then why is there a special day that differentiates trans women from women and trans men from men? The tension is obvious. Transgender people cannot simultaneously be distinct and indistinct from the sex or gender they wish to embody. Maybe a slightly better, better worded than the Adam's apple joke. Now, this is, of course, immediately creates a massive backlash from conservatives and religious people all across the Christian spectrum. Biden blasted for proclaiming trans people made in the image of God on Easter. This is one of the quotes. Today on Transgender Day of Visibility, I have a simple message for all trans Americans. I see you. We all see. You are made in the image of God, and you're worthy of respect and dignity. Now, theologically, of course, all people are created in the image of God. That being said, Dean Cain did have a good point about what happens after the creation. If folks are made in the image of God, then why all the surgery and hormones? Which is a fair question. It's a fair question. Caitlyn Jenner also reacted with outrage. Now, of course, she is someone who's kind of on the, I guess she's a moderate. I don't know what she is. I mean, again, it's sometimes difficult to tell. It's kind of been the story of the life of Bruce Jenner. But Caitlin writes, I am absolutely disgusted that Joe Biden has declared the most holy of holy days a self-proclaimed devout Catholic as Transgender Day of Visibility. The only thing you should be declaring on this day is he is risen. Again, absolutely, he is risen. That's a great thing to declare. Now, the thing is, of course, that it wasn't exactly this simple, and it's important to get the context of this moment. Caitlyn Jenner, as she wrote, Biden has declared Easter Transgender Day. Well, I mean, it's sort of. I mean, he did do the proclamation that pointed it out. However, Transgender Day of Visibility apparently has been around for a while, since I think 2009. And this is the 15th year they've done it. And Transgender Day of Visibility sparks political outrage because it coincides with Easter this year. It's always on March 31st, basically. Now, no one knew this because no one cares about the Transgender Day of Visibility. Trans people don't care about the Transgender Day of Visibility. They're like, look, we got enough days. There's like 100 days on the calendar that now are LGBTQIA2+ related. Can we stop having so many days? I'm sick of celebrating. I want to take the stupid tree down. I can't get it down because 2 weeks later, there's another holiday, and I got to put the rainbow tree back up. It doesn't work with our motif here. You know, just from an interior design perspective, it doesn't work that much. That's what trans people are saying. So everyone's kind of like, what? What do you mean? The fact is that it occasionally does. I think it's 5 times this century coincide with Easter on the same day. The day was created in 2009, has always been observed on March 31st, including all 4 years of the Trump administration. The only other time the Easter has fallen on March 31st since Transgender Day of Visibility was created was in 2013 during the Obama administration. Easter usually falls between March 22nd and April 25th every year. The holiday is celebrated on the first Sunday after the full moon or following the spring equinox. Long story short, the day's always on March 31st for the Transgender Day thing, which they, you know, is obviously just a brand new invention they just came up with. Easter falls all over about a month's time, so occasionally they're going to coincide. The dates lining up in that way are a coincidence. It wasn't like Joe Biden said, no, you got to put it on Easter this year. I really want to screw with people. But there's more to it than just that. The context is important. So you're not overreacting. You're not saying something that isn't true. That's important to know. And that is all true. However, there's more to it. Let me give you another element here. Religious-themed designs banned from White House Easter egg art contest. Children of the National Guard are prohibited from submitting religious Easter egg designs for the 2024 Celebrating the National Guard Families Art event at the White House. The art contest is part of the White House's Easter traditions, which include the annual Easter egg roll. The flyer for the contest states that an Easter egg design submission must not include any questionable content, religious symbols, overtly religious themes, or partisan political statements. Again, this is something you kind of, I don't know, maybe you could see this stuff coming, but it's important to have the context. There was a community note that came up on X/Twitter. Readers added context. The American Egg Board's flyer, standard non-discrimination language requesting artwork, has been used for the last 45 years across all Dem and Republican administrations, including Trump's, for all White House Easter egg rolls. Biden did not create this policy. It is the policy of the AEB. And when there's a policy, you know, like when you think about an authority like the American Egg Board, I mean, you got to listen to them, right? Look, the context is important, right? We should know that the date of Trans Day falls on March 31st, and apparently something that everyone cares so much about. Sure. And occasionally it does coincide with Easter. Same thing with the Easter egg roll language here. It's always been a non-religious event. And so they don't want religious stuff in there. It's been the same for 45 years. That's all important. You can't own the left if you are, throwing out straw men, right? Like, you want to make sure you're getting it right. You don't want to give an easy opportunity to people on the left to slam you for not knowing what you're talking about. So having the context down is important, but it is a little interesting here because the reason why this was successful, the gaslighting was successful in this case, is because it's so freaking believable, right? Like, you know, would people believe that Joe Biden would do something like this? Yeah. Like, almost immediately, the answer is, yeah. Now, this is a lesson to be learned online whenever you're in a political debate. When it seems too good to be true, and again, I mean, in this case, the worst possible way, it's not good to overlook Easter. But if it seems too good to be true, if it seems like, wait a minute, this is too easy, this is too low-hanging fruit, take a minute and check it out. Because a lot of times, you know, you might be being misled down a path for a reason. Biden's, despite the context, Biden's rising of the level of Trans Day to the equivalent of Easter or the even playing field with Easter is notable, however. It is a change in our society. Look, the White House knew what was going to go on here. They're not idiots. They knew if they were to come out and say, well, it's Trans Day of Visibility on the same day as Easter, they knew how people were going to react to that. They knew people would be upset. This is pure gaslighting from the left and the administration. And of course, the idea that, oh, gosh, you guys are crazy. You should have known every day. Everyone knows Trans Day of Visibility is March 31st. Nobody knows that. I guarantee 90% of trans people didn't know that until this weekend. Why would you even care? Why would you even want that? I mean, we already have an entire month of the calendar that's LGBTQIA2+ month. We did a monologue, I don't know how many, it was probably a year or so ago now. We went through every day of the calendar to try to figure out if there was any day that didn't have an LGBTQ holiday on it. I think there's a couple, but it was very infrequent. Seriously, there's like 100 holidays now being memorialized throughout the year. And it's a little incredible at this point. Now, they went back to talk to the person who founded Trans Day of Visibility. And hilariously enough, one of the reasons why they put it on March 31st, now, it wasn't because they were trying to target Easter. It was because they were trying to avoid all the other trans days that were on the calendar. There was like, this was the only gap remaining. We have to put it at the end of March because we're going to bump into Pride Month or LGBTQ Month or, I don't know, Pansexual Awareness, whatever those things are. They had to avoid that because they didn't want it to be right on top of the other one. That's kind of the big thing. But at some point you wonder, are internet trolls, are Twitter trolls running the country? Because they obviously knew what would happen here. And I think that's maybe the most important, fascinating part of this. Like, what's the White House doing? I mentioned earlier that this has happened before, and it will happen another three or four times this century, where if Trans Day of Visibility continues to be a thing, it'll fall on the same day as Easter because of just the way the calendars work. Well, this has already happened in 2013. And, you know, no right-wing president was president in 2013. Barack Obama was president. We went back and looked for his big statement on Trans Day of Visibility. Couldn't really find anything. I mean, he barely mentioned Pride Month that year. And that's what's kind of interesting about this. This is an election year. Joe Biden is theoretically trying to win re-election. What do you do when you're trying to win re-election? Well, typically, you reach out to voters who might be skeptical of what you're doing and try to win them over. Joe Biden has had a real problem. Well, let's say people of color, religious people of color in particular. He's had a real problem with people in the middle. He's had a problem with people who think, you know, this guy, I might even be sort of socially moderate or whatever, but this guy's gone too far for my tastes. He's too crazy out there. And what does he do? He comes out and makes a big deal about Trans Day of Visibility when it falls on Easter. He's not reaching out to the middle to try to persuade persuadable voters. He's going the other way. He's reaching out to his base. I mean, at some point, there was some conversation behind the scenes with him and a bunch of his advisors, and it was like, ah, well, we got Trans Day of Visibility and Easter kind of falling at the same time. What do we do here, guys? And they were like, well, should we please try to, like, play to the religious people in the country that might vote for us? We always say how Catholic we are. Should we try to get them on our side? They might not be easy to get. Or should we play to the AOC wing of the party, the Ilhan Omar wing of the party that would, you know, care about Trans Day of Visibility on the same level of Easter? And what do? They chose that side over and over again. This is a new thing, I think. I mean, I don't know if they're so confident that they're not going to lose or that people would just have a short attention span. They'll forget this by the time the election goes. But over and over and over again, the White House picks pleasing its base rather than going after people who could actually win the election for him. And look, I think Trump is guilty of this at times as well. I mean, he's not exactly reaching out to Ron DeSantis voters or to Nikki Haley voters. He just seems to be doubling down on his base over and over and over and over again. And that might work. With these two guys going against each other, it might be the type of election where this works. The last two elections have been elections like that. Trump versus Clinton, Trump versus Biden. It winds up coming down to whether you like Donald Trump or not, and maybe Trump thinks that's enough for him to win, and maybe Biden thinks that's enough for him to win. The bottom line is it's strange. It's strange and different behavior. Barack Obama not going down that road. Remember in 2013 when this went on, Barack Obama had just barely admitted he was for gay marriage. Think of how far we've come. Now we're celebrating Trans Day on the same day as Easter when 10, 11 years ago, Barack Obama was just like barely in a whispery voice because Joe Biden blurted it out to an open mic trying to admit that he was for gay marriage. You wonder what the plan is. What's the pattern here? Are we just going to this point where everyone's just going to get their camps and just keep doubling down and tripling down and quadrupling down and try to win elections that way. That might work for you in one election, but it's certainly not a way to build a big coalition. You get the sort of majorities that Joe Biden has, squeaky ones, you know, losing the House or almost right away. All these things seem to happen partially because you're not even trying to reach out of your own base. If everyone wants to live with one seat majorities till the end of time, well, that might be how this works. Another approach might be trying to win over the people that are winnable. Both sides should be trying to do that. I just hope the right side decides to do it first. The real estate market is really fun right now, isn't it? Real estate is a blast right now, especially with those nice 7 and 8% rates on your mortgage. Oh, so much fun. In a time like this, it's even more important that realestateagentsitrust.com is around. Realestateagentsitrust.com is a company started by Glenn Beck. Back in the day, he wanted to have the best agent he could have because, you know, honestly, he was just really frustrated with the experiences he was having at that point. He said, there's got to be some sort of systematic approach we can apply to this to make things better for people. They've done that. They've come up with this. They talk to people. They screen them. You get to talk to them, make sure they're right for you. They got the best agents in the area everywhere. But you know, when things are going well, the market's going up, you can buy and sell a home and make a profit with no problem. That makes it easy. When it's a market like this, where you're dealing with really high interest rates and you got to make sure you pick the exact right home, realestateagentsitrust.com, even more crucial today than it was yesterday. It's realestateagentsitrust.com. It's a free service to you, by the way. Realestateagentsitrust.com. I am happy to welcome Jill Savage back to the program. She's a contributor right here on Blaze TV, currently employed as my Caitlin Clark bandwagon psychiatrist as I try to get through this very difficult season.
You try to.
Yeah.
You try to. I'm talking you off of the ledge. I am the Iowa Hawkeye grad.
Yes.
You have come to the bandwagon, which I fully appreciate.
Yeah.
But I do feel like it's my duty then to keep you sane
yes.
in these moments as well.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I know the pressure is high on you, but I'm a total bandwagon fan. I completely embrace that. I'm not denying it. I am new over the past couple of years just because I like watching Caitlin Clark take like half court shots on pull up jumpers on fast breaks. It's just fun to watch. And today is a big day because she and the rest of Iowa are playing LSU. This is a game, of course, last year in the finals where famously LSU won the game and sort of tried to put it in Caitlin Clark's face. A lot of controversy since then. Can you give us just a lay of the land of what this game should look like to start us off?
The lay of the land, what this game should look like. Caitlin Clark goes out and dominates.
Yeah.
This is where we start. But it is going to be one of the most fascinating rematches that we've ever seen, because last time in the national championship game, this had 9.9 million viewers. It was the most ever watched for a women's basketball game. They expect the game tonight. Mm-hmm. to be even bigger than that. It's going to set ratings blowouts for, this is an Elite Eight game that they're going to have. So they're two different teams this year with the supporting cast around them, but it's still Caitlin Clark against Angel Reese. The two dominant stars from last year's games are still going to be in it. So just expect LSU good on rebounds. Caitlin Clark pulling up from three. Caitlin needs a supporting cast around her to help, and that's when Iowa wins.
Yeah, because I mean, watching a couple of the Iowa games in the tournament, like it's a lot of familiar faces I can remember from last year. Like it's not like men's basketball where the guys show up for like 4 weeks and then they go to the pros. Like they actually hang around in women's basketball, so you actually get a vibe for the teams. Is LSU much worse? Like why does LSU make it to the finals last year, but then they're what, a three seed this year?
They are, yeah. But you have to remember, like, they got hot in the tournament last year as well. They caught fire, so it wasn't just they lost their opening game of this season to Colorado. They lost a couple more throughout, but they're still a really, really good team. And their coach, Kib Mulkey, while she wears the craziest outfits, she's a really good coach, right? She won multiple titles with Baylor before, LSU now, and you just see her eccentric style. And I think that people look at LSU a little differently because Kib Mulkey is the head coach.
Mm-hmm.
And they just get a lot of extra headlines around them. But they are a very solid team. And they've actually gotten better at shooting, I think, than they were last year.
There's a bunch of controversies kind of revolving around this matchup. But before, well, maybe this is one of them, but before we get to like the ones I was meaning to talk to you about, the coach, you mentioned she wears all the crazy outfits. But there's some, she had some big profile written about her recently, and sort of, it was sort of a controversy around that. Can you explain this in, I don't know, 30 seconds?
The Washington Post came out with a very long, lengthy article about Kim Mulkey, and Kim took the offensive. Before the article even came out in a press conference, she was just saying, I have lawyers, I'm ready to sue. Yeah.
And she knew it was going to be bad.
But people were like, we don't even know what's in there. Now everybody needs to go see. And it was just some of the allegations of she treated gay players on her team differently than the straight players. And then, you know, others that are currently on the team were like, no, she's fine. It's no big deal. Mm-hmm. She treats us all the same. She's just kind of, you know, a different style of a coach.
Yeah.
And
dresser.
If you take it personally, like there might be like internal reasons that you're thinking you're being treated differently. But that was essentially what the article was about. And
was it overblown, would you say? Does it seem overblown? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So now let's get to another overblown controversy. The Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese back and forth. And why this is interesting, it's interesting. Yeah, right. Like there was the hand gesture they heard around the world after the, you know, as the game was ending last time. They have this sort of rivalry. Caitlin Clark sort of takes the high road. It's like, ah, you know, we're needed for both needed for, you know, women's basketball. That's all great. What we do see, though, is these accusations from everybody outside of this saying there's some sort of racist element, like America's racist because they seem to have embraced Caitlin Clark and not Angel Reese. I mean, these things happen, right? Like sometimes the white player is embraced. I mean, like there's, I don't know, you could name a few black NBA players that have been embraced over the years by the white, you know, largely white audience in America. Why is this, is this just another example of the media trying to inject race into where it doesn't really belong?
Let's leave LeBron out of this, all right? Let's not go
LeBron,
there.
Yes.
But when you look at it, Angel Reese at the end of last season had the most number of NIL deals, the most money coming in for NIL. Mm-hmm. Caitlin Clark has surpassed her this year. Well, what have they done on the court? Caitlin went and set every single record possibly imaginable. She's setting like records that we didn't even know. Like, oh, now she has the single season scoring record, right? Like all these extra things keep happening. And we're like, gosh, can we just stop with the records with Caitlin this season? But when you see that, they're like, oh, well, Caitlin's in all these commercials and Caitlin's doing this and everybody cares about Caitlin's game. Yeah. Because she's had a great season, a great career that she's put together. Now, Angel Reese is a very good dominant player in her own right, but she's not setting all of the individual records. There's not like a SportsCenter watch countdown for whatever Angel Reese has going on. And because of that, they're like, oh, but you like the white player better. But like you said at the very top of the segment, Caitlin is pulling up with transition threes from the logo.
Right.
This has never been done before in the women's game. This is why women's basketball is having a moment right now, is because there is a transcendental player that is coming through and just wowing all of America. And that doesn't take anything away from the black players and what they are accomplishing right now. Because in the game after that, you're going to have Juju Watkins for USC. And that's the second game of the evening. And she's going to dominate. And people are going to be just as excited about her as a freshman.
Yeah, she's a really, really good player and only a freshman. So that she's probably the next star. But like it just seemed to be like there's a difference between what Caitlin Clark is doing and what anyone else is doing. She's changing the sport, right? Like, like Steph Curry is the most recent example on the guy's side of doing this. Like, the whole way the sport is being played is changing because of this one person. How could you not notice that? And we've all noticed it when Jordan did it. We noticed it when Curry did it. I'm not putting LeBron in that conversation. I think it's, you know, basically sacrilegious. But you know what I'm saying? Like, there are certain people who do something different than just play really well. Like, Angel Reese, to me, like, when I've watched her play, she looks like a tall person who is pretty good at basketball and looks like other previous stars that I've seen in women's basketball. Like, obviously,
she's not a revolutionary post player.
Totally. Right.
She's a good post player.
Good player.
But there's nothing special or unique. Like, she didn't invent the hook shot here,
right?
Like, there's nothing new that she's doing that somebody before or after isn't also going to be able to do. When you see Caitlin Clark, Iowa has played in front of all but two arenas that have been sold out this season, and those two arenas were over the Thanksgiving tournament. on a neutral site in Florida. If they were anywhere else, like not on a holiday, they would have been sold out as well. And you see Caitlin, the demand for her home games, away games, she's there signing autographs forever after this because she understood with her interaction with Maya Moore, was her favorite player, the impact that that had on 10-year-old Caitlin Clark. Mm-hmm. And she sees what she's able to do for the next generation. I'm sorry, you just don't get that type of fandom, that type of excitement for anyone else in the sport right now.
Yeah, I feel like, I mean, in some weird ways, like it, if she were some intersectional person, she'd actually be getting more attention. This would be like, it would be even more part of the story. Like it would be in a dumb part of the story because I would want to watch her because she was just good, but they would make it about whatever glass ceiling she was breaking.
Yes.
And of course, you know, we're constantly frustrated about this, these types of things. This is like not just women's basketball, it's everything. Let me bring you to another part of this, which is interesting. There was some host who said basically that Caitlin Clark is good enough to play in the NBA. Now, I love Caitlin Clark. I'm an unabashed fan, like I am. First of all, let's start there. Could Caitlin Clark play in the NBA?
No. And that is stupid. Right? It's like the Serena Williams thing. She's like, listen, I'm the best female player to ever be. If I went and tried to play against a man, I would get smoked. Yeah. And Caitlin Clark, like, she's really, really, really good. She would be absolutely dominated in an NBA game. Wouldn't even get, you know, point, like, any minutes off the bench.
Yeah, she's physically would just have tons and tons of, I can't even imagine her trying to play one-on-one defense against some guy who's 250 pounds. Like, it's just, like, what, how does that work?
This is also why men and women play in different avenues.
Oh, different.
They have their own section for a reason.
They should do that. They should separate the men. That would be a great idea.
It's a great idea. We've lost track of that idea recently, but we should go back to it.
It is fascinating. And like, so then Clay Travis came out in kind of a response to this. He said, Caitlin Clark could not start on a top state champion high school boys team. Now, this is more controversial. I'd love to get your vibe on, A, whether you think that's true, and B, he's being treated like, you know, some media matters, of course, pulled it. Like, it was this big controversy. Like, even if he's wrong, it's just it's a sports opinion. It's not that big of a deal. But, like, first of all, let's start there. Yeah, I mean, do you think Caitlin Clark, could she start on a boys' championship team?
I do. If we take college Caitlin Clark and we let her start on a high school team, she's 6 feet tall, right? Like you can make it as a guard on a high school team at 6 feet and be totally fine. The range that she has is good enough. Now, is she going to be playing again the defense? Are we locking anybody down? No, but that's also not what she would be out there to do.
Right.
She would be out there to shoot the logo threes. And I think that at the high school level, when you drop her down, then she'll be totally fine.
Yeah,
totally fine.
I think her game lends itself a little bit to that because, like, I think Angel Reese would be a much tougher fit on a team like that because she can't. She's not gonna be able to jump like the boys can. She's not gonna be able to do a lot of those things in the power wise in the low post game.
Yeah.
Where like Caitlin Clark, if she's on a team with other people who are getting double teamed, she's gonna make these open shots. Like she's an incredible shooter, and like she could be. I don't know that she's the star necessarily that she is, but she could contribute. I would think at that level.
Yeah, she could come in and drop a couple threes off the bench, and your team's better for it.
Right.
And then she goes back out and, you know, everybody carries on with the regular offense.
And I think
you have sharpshooters that you bring in off the bench.
Totally. The question is, why is this controversial? Because, like, we all understand these things, you know, and I don't know what age it happens. My son plays 12U select baseball. He's a good player. We were watching a tournament, though, with like one of the top 5 or 10 teams in the country. And on this team, we were at the game. Pitching for the 12-year-old team is a girl. She's throwing 70-mile-an-hour fastballs, right? Like, it was incredible. Like, and she hit a home run, like, in this game. Incredible. I don't know. Like, at some point, though, right, like, you know, the testosterone's kicking in, and she's not going to be able to be the biggest and strongest anymore. Like, at 12, she can do it. At some point, that changes. Every human being knows this is true, and yet our whole media is designed to give us this weird idea that it's not. I mean, how do you get a sense of reality when people won't admit basic truths?
I mean, we could have a whole show just on that right there, because that's what we're doing now, right? Every step that we're taking that we call a step forward is really just, it's in the name of progress. And you end up 30 steps behind where you already were. And all of the advancements that we've made with, you know, racism in the country, well, that's not good enough anymore. It all takes a step back now. Everything has just reverted to, you know, we had good things.
Yeah,
we did at one point.
We can't have nice things.
But now we can't.
It's amazing because, like, two of the most basic things that, you know, you probably should understand. Number one, skin color doesn't matter. Doesn't matter at all. Number two, gender, you know, does matter. There's physical characteristics that make it so that genders should match up against the same gender. And you also can't just transition back and forth willy-nilly whenever you feel like it. Those two things have been observed by humanity throughout all humanity. The skin color thing we didn't get right for a very long time, but recently I think we've become a lot better on that. And yet the media, the left, are all trying to reverse those two things. They want to bring it back to a point where skin color is really, really important and that gender means nothing. How does civilization exist in this?
All diversity, equity, and inclusion, Stu. Yeah. But one of my favorite memes is like when they have like the Pompeii thing and they have the skeletons, you know, that they're like, oh, that was a man. And they're like, how dare you?
Yeah.
How do you know?
Right.
How do you know? Because we can tell that this body was a man at one point in time. I don't know how they identified, but that's what it always is going to go back to, because you can't change basic reality. Mm.
Do you have a prediction on the game?
I am a complete wreck the entire day.
Yes, that's the prediction. You can't function.
I can't function. It's terrible. It's debilitating. It's worse. I went to the Final Four game last year against South Carolina when we beat them. This is worse today. Like my nerves today, and I'm not even going to the game. Obviously, I'm here, but it's too much. We need to win for my sanity.
Well, say a prayer for Jill as she tries to get through this game, and I will bandwagon myself into watching it as well. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch. I really hope Iowa wins, and I really hope they take the high road. I don't want them to drop down to the level. I don't want to see that. I have too high of an impression of her at this point. So that's where I am. Jill Savage, a contributor to Blaze TV. Very nervous Nelly today.
Yes.
She's having a very difficult day. So say a prayer for her. Thanks so much for coming on the program.
Anytime.
Well, Calamity Pete is back, and I will tell you, after talking about him last week and just throwing out the possibility that maybe the explanation for all of the tragedies and calamities since Pete Buttigieg became our transportation secretary, maybe the reason for all those is that Pete Buttigieg is individually going to these situations before they occur and sabotaging the infrastructure. It seems unlikely, and I think it is unlikely. I mean, I would like him to disprove it. I mean, it would be great if he could just disprove it. But it is the only thing that ties this all together, because I don't understand what happened to our country. All of a sudden, since this guy got in office, everything's starting to fall apart. People are crashing into bridges, and trains are going off the rails, and wheels are falling off of planes. Like, this wasn't like normal American life before this guy came around, right? I am remembering this correctly. So I was a little concerned about that. And I again asked the question, you know, what's going on here? Many people over the weekend now are starting to send me, each time there's a new tragedy, they're sending me another Calamity Pete update and telling me about some other weird thing in our transportation system. And I think it's interesting to note. Pete, where was Pete Buttigieg is my question. Where was he when all these things happened? Now, you might be thinking, well, the person you're describing sounds like a perfect profile to be president of the United States. And I will say, strangely enough, I kind of agree. Like, these people who become president of the United States a lot of times are so incompetent that it seems like tragedy and calamity follows them wherever they go. So maybe this is a good profile to be president of the United States, but Pete was just feeling the pressure. So many people asking him, wow, look at all the calamity you've overseen here. Shouldn't you become the leader of the free world? And he was asked about that this weekend. Watch.
I know when a lot of people see you on television these days, they may still think to themselves, oh, I wonder if he still wants the big job one day. Now that you've been closer to it, working alongside a president, is it still something you aspire to?
Well, I certainly have a new perspective on just how demanding that job is, watching President Biden deal with so many concerns, challenges, and opportunities for this country. And I'm proud to be a small part of the big team that helps him get that done. I sincerely don't know whether I will run for elected office of any kind again. What I do know is that I've been asked to take on a big job. I'm honored and humbled to do it. It's hard, it's rewarding, yeah. And it's taken about 110% of what I have to give right now.
This is you at 110%? Like, I would have guessed like 8%, but this is 110% of his effort, just in case you were wondering how good of a president he would be. I'm not exactly impressed by the Pete Buttigieg reign of terror that we've seen so far, but of course it got a little bit worse this weekend. A section of California's Scenic Highway 1 collapsed in a storm around noon Sunday. Crews had determined that travel in the northbound lane was safe. After it had collapsed and people were being warned not to go over it. Again, where was Pete Buttigieg at this time? Do we know? He may not have been there. I'm not saying he was there underneath the bridge making it collapse. That would be crazy. That's not what people do. However, it would be nice to rule it out. You know what I'm saying? Like, for example, where was he when Oklahoma State Patrol said it is diverting traffic after a barge hit a bridge? You might be like, oh, that wasn't in Oklahoma. That was in Baltimore. No, this is just a different barge and a different bridge. This one did not collapse, thankfully. It did create a lot of craziness, of course, and not exactly something that you want to see happen. The bridge crosses the Arkansas River. And again, like and this is why I've been bringing this stuff up. I made the recommendation that after the last bridge incident we had, we should just make sure that Pete doesn't have a bunch of scuba gear in his garage. Like, let's just check his garage. Does he have a lot of scuba gear? Is it possible that he was scuba diving underneath the ship that hit the bridge? And that's tasteless. And of course, it can't possibly be a problem. He probably doesn't even have scuba gear. But if we had just confirmed it, then we wouldn't have the questions today of, like, was he in scuba gear in the Arkansas River making that barge hit a bridge? Did I miss this story? Is it just the normal state of affairs that every day or two we have another barge hit a bridge? Is that like super common? Is it happening all the time? Was it happening all the time during the Reagan administration? And I just don't remember it because I was a kid. Like, what is the reasoning for all of this? And of course, the only thing that sort of as a high level idea that ties it all together is Pete Buttigieg is responsible for each and every one of these incidents. But that can't possibly be, right? Like, it would be, you know, it would be very difficult for him to even travel to all those places. Now, we have seen his private jet travel costs, and we do know they're very high. He does seem to be flying around all over the place to different events and spending a fortune on it. So that part of it sure does fit, but it seems unlikely at the end of the day we're going to find out that Pete Buttigieg, we're going to have like pictures of him in snorkeling gear. It's probably not true, but let's just rule it out, shall we? Let's take some time, maybe the next couple of weeks, and just rule out each and every one of these incidents that it was Pete Buttigieg personally involved in making them occur. And once we figure that out, we can move on with our lives. But until then, it's going to be very difficult. Very strange story on 60 Minutes over the weekend. Russian assassination unit is linked to U.S. officials and Havana syndrome. This is, you remember Havana syndrome? So people were down in Cuba, U.S. officials, they all started saying they had the same types of symptoms, like they, you know, ear issues, hearing issues. The thought was maybe it was some sort of sound weapon or directed energy weapon. It was really, really creepy. And we were all, you know, kind of like, what's going on here? Long time passes. Five big agencies come out and say, this is last year in 2023, come out and say, okay, yeah, basically, no, it's nothing. It's not a directed energy weapon. We don't think it's really much of anything. It's a collection of other symptoms and nothing to be worried about, not foreign spy activity. And then 60 Minutes says that they have now tied this to a unit 29155, a Russian GRU unit. And you wonder, like, I don't understand this, because I thought this is what they just told us, this wasn't happening. Now all of a sudden they're back on it, and now they're saying it's Russia. Now, of course, a lot of people are like, wait a minute, very convenient that you're trying to get money to go fight against Russia and you're bringing this up with Russia. It's hard to know. I mean, they blame everything on Russia, so it's hard to know when to believe them and when not to. We're going to go into this in more depth on radio tomorrow and kind of do a deep dive. Check that out with Glenn Beck tomorrow. Trump's VP search is starting to get serious. Vladimir Putin now is leading. No, I'm only kidding. They blame everything on Russia, but not this, I don't think. Not yet. They're saying the list has included everyone from Tim Scott, Kristi Noem, Byron Donalds, Elise Stefanik, Tulsi Gabbard, J.D. Vance. Really... I mean, they're saying he's going to, one person close to the Trump camp said he's going to draw this out apprentice style. A reason I'm not spending all that much time on it is, first of all, it doesn't really matter as far as people voting for Donald Trump or not. It does matter, of course, on how he governs. God forbid something happens to him or they throw him in a gulag. You want to make sure you have a good second choice. But generally speaking, I don't think it matters too much. I think people vote for the top of the ticket, especially when it's Donald Trump. Like maybe with someone like Biden, who's kind of like a non-entity, you might have the VP being a bigger pick. I think the RFK Jr. pick, I think, was substantial. The fact that he went left with it instead of right was significant and probably beneficial for Trump. But Trump is going to make this out. He's going to build the drama. But I don't think it's really something that people are voting on as we get to November. Nine states plan to ban gas-powered car sales by 2035. This is the Advanced Clean Cars 2 rules. They originated in California. And, of course, everyone now jumping on the bandwagon. It's interesting. I feel like the market's going the other way right now. You know, we've talked about all these stocks that are down that are electric car manufacturers. Things are sort of falling apart to the point, like I'm almost at the point where it feels like it's a good investment to invest into an electric car company because they've been beat up so much lately. I mean, some of these companies are down 90 and 95%. Even Tesla is, I think, the biggest drag on the S&P at this point this year. You wonder if... You know, there's like a lull and all this money's going to come in from Biden and they're going to wind up saving this industry. Who knows? But it doesn't feel like it's a good industry. And by the way, speaking of industries that are completely defunct and destroyed, FTX founder Sam Bankman-Fried speaks out after his sentencing. He says, "I'm haunted every day by what was lost." It's funny because the Sam Bankman-Fried thing I'm amazed by just because when this happened, which was what, 2021, 2022, you have the whole thing happening where it peaks Elon Musk on Saturday Night Live, all the prices peak, they crash down. The FTX is like the bottom of the barrel, right? That goes under, everything crashes after that. And everyone's like, every headline is crypto is dead, Bitcoin is dead. This is finally over. We don't have to hear from these crypto bros anymore. And then before they can even get Sam Bankman-Fried in prison, before he's even in prison, we're back to all-time highs. And now they're using these all-time highs to actually pay back the people from FTX, but not at the current value of Bitcoin, at the value it was at the time. So if you had a Bitcoin in FTX, they're like, hey, you're fully paid back. We gave you the $17,000, which should cover that cost. When in reality, now it's worth $70,000. Sleight of hand. That's that. You don't get prosecuted for that sleight of hand, though. Sam Bankman-Fried, rightfully so, got in trouble. But when you're coming in to sweep everything up afterward, apparently everything's A-OK. OK, so here's what happened. Guy's walking into a convenience store. And you might say, is this a story about you, Stu? No, it's actually not in this particular case, though I do hit convenience stores a few times a day. And so this guy's walking into a convenience store, Quick Trip, and this is a great convenience store. I know they're in Texas. I don't know how many there are around the country. And something minor occurs that might be memorable in his life. He walks through the door, and there's a giant bang, and a man narrowly escapes death as runaway saw skids toward him from a construction site. That's all. You know, that's it. We have the video for you. It's incredible. There's no sound for podcast listeners, but I'll give it to you as we watch it. He's walking in. He opens the door to the convenience store. The door closes behind him and then walks through the parking lot as a giant blade just flies through the parking lot from a nearby construction site and then is just sitting implanted in the door. Going into the convenience store saved his life. And that's the big lesson here. Going into a Quick Trip, honey, is not a problem with my health. It's saving my life.